Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is Dee. Dee is a longtime correspondent of mine from Canada. We've been bouncing emails back and forth and chatting online, and I thought it was high time to get him on the show because I really value his insight and his perspective. He has a poli-sci background, so he looks at things from a geopolitical standpoint, and his insights from having spent a lot of time in the Far East are invaluable in this day and age. And also, he's quite familiar with the alien agenda, UFOs, what's really going on. Quick shout out to a dear friend of mine who's passed away, Mary Ann Fisher, and her husband, Craig Bowers, a good buddy of mine, just sending out well wishes to Mary Ann, wherever you are on the other side of the veil. We love you, we respect you, and we were just so thankful to have you here in the flesh with us for such a, sadly, such a short time. But thank you for being with us. And thank you for being on my show, Marianne. I've had you on as a guest and as a panel member on a few occasions. For those of you that don't know, Craig Bauer is my old buddy. When you hear me talking about the reptilian stakeouts I used to go on, and you can hear me talk about this and, Chris Turner is excellent. Don't mention the Reptilians documentary. The guy that I was doing those reptilian stakeouts with was is Craig Bowers. Okay, the kind of misadventures he and I had in the central Nevada desert—that's a whole nother story. But just sending out thoughts and love to Craig for the difficult time that he's going through. But he's soldiering on. And another quick comment: I just think it's humorous, for lack of a better term, that the surface level types are having this emotional crisis because Tucker Carlson talked about crashed alien spacecraft and the recovered alien body, something that we've known for decades, right? And now Tucker, to me, this is just me, no one else has to think this, to me Tucker is in the big leagues now because he doesn't care what people think. If the surface level types are having this emotional crisis about him talking about aliens, too bad, so sad. Because Jesse Marcel, the intelligence officer of the 509th Bomb Wing, was talking about recovered alien technology as far back as the mid-1970s. The late great Leonard Stringfield had developed a number of sources in formerly in the military who had seen alien bodies at places like Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, who'd taken part in alien crash retrievals. I've had Larry Warren on my show and Steve LaPlume on my show lately, and I encourage people to plug into that interview because we're talking December 25, 1980, when about 40 Air Force security personnel and disaster preparedness personnel had surrounded a landed alien craft in a clearing in the Rendlesham Forest. Out of this landed craft came three aliens, the wing commander, Colonel at the time, Gordon Williams, later General Gordon Williams, confronted the three aliens. Larry Warren was right there when this happened, and Larry had suffered not only physical effects, which I'll get into shortly, but also the amount of vitriol and spiteful, venomous hatred meted out to Larry in particular for being the one who's gone out on a limb from the beginning. And Larry's presence in Rendlesham Forest that night has been confirmed by no less than four other people who were also out that night, right? So, Larry suffered retinal burns from the flash, right that preceded right before the presence of that landed craft. 5 years after the event, he started suffering hemorrhaging, and when doctors examined him, they asked him point blank, "Have you ever been exposed to a non-shielded nuclear device?" Now think about that. Is that a hoax? 5 years after the fact, he starts hemorrhaging, and then the doctors ask him, "Have you ever been exposed to a non-shielded nuclear device?" That's pretty far to go to perpetrate a hoax, if you ask me. And so that is in real time, whereas most of the Roswell witnesses sadly have passed on, we still have people like Larry Warren and others who've been to Rendlesham Forest. And now there's a whole cottage industry with all these fakes and frauds, Nick Pope amongst them, and some of these limited hangout types, Colonel Halt, who has done his level best to smear the good name of Larry. But Larry stood tall and I'm proud to call him my friend. Please, I encourage people to plug into that interview because they're and also the member segment where they're talking about what happened underground when Larry was taken beneath this photo lab, beneath which was an underground laboratory where all kinds of stuff happened, including an encounter with an alien behind a screen, which other abductees have told me about similar things. So anyhow, I just want to bring that into sharp focus because the surface level types are having this emotional crisis about Tucker Carlson talking about aliens. And, I mean, Bob Lazar has been out all this time talking about this at S4. And so when these critics talk about how aliens are a psyop, Project Bluebeam, this is uninformed because they're not looking, they're taking it out of context. They're not talking, they're completely ignorant about all the research that had gone on before the crash at Roswell, the crash at Aztec, the crash in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so quickly we're seeing this division between the surface level types and us, basically. And this is just me talking. I'm beginning to see the masses of the surface level types who are dismissive of aliens and UFOs, who are the prime movers of this global agenda. I'm beginning to see them as the real controlled opposition. So, without any further ado, D, my friend, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thank you, James. I listened to the first part of that interview last night. I got one of those nice 3 a.m. wake-up calls. So I could go back to sleep, but it was excellent. And I really love the guests that you bring on the show in general. I've been listening to you for years, sometimes in, very isolated circumstances, and it's just been a godsend. And I mean, you're doing the good work, and I appreciate it. All and all the people that come and talk with you on the show.
Thank you, Dee. And I feel the same way about you because you've been out there going to all these different places. Tell us a bit about yourself and your voyage of discovery, what brought you to this point in time as far as your understanding and your insight.
Sure. And I guess, I try to avoid like the same sort of narrative structure that a lot of people go through. It tends to get a bit obvious and boring, but I think like most people, it happened in a series of stages over my life where I think I had to be prepared to the point where I could sort of accept things, because I think you can't walk out of the normie freezer without gradually going through this, because even when you get exposed to some ideas, it you have a fight with yourself in terms of being able to accept it. And sometimes you do run back to the normie world and back and forth. So I guess that's the short of it. But basically, especially 10 years ago, I guess I would say things had really started to push the envelope for me in terms of my level of awareness. And it was several things that sort of hit me at the same time. A big one that sort of really struck me was the big Chinese data hack that happened in 2013. And just seeing how quickly that was being brushed under the carpet was extremely disturbing. I mean, it basically came out and said they copied everything. F-35, anti-ballistic missiles, naval systems, everything. They said basically it was their entire system of research and development up to that. And then the attitude was like, oh, well, I guess we'll just have to, build it back from scratch, build whole new systems and tax charge the taxpayer all over again. Then you never heard anything about it. And that I found that like really odd, that there was, I mean, it the most irrelevant scandal can go on for like weeks or years, and yet something of that degree was just sort of going ahead. That sort of coincided with many other things. Going to, I was invited to go to Germany with a colleague of mine. She's from there, and I started to have more revelations as I was piecing together, East Germany, what was going on there, and then the more I looked at it, the more I realized that the whole thing was it was just a psychological experiment that was a continuation of what the Third Reich was doing in the 40s, and continued it for like another 30 years. that their whole population was put under this type of psychological control. When I stood in a control tower at Checkpoint Alpha, an old Soviet style control tower, I looked at it and I was like, this is all been theater. I mean, a horrible theater that a lot of people obviously invested in it, their lives in it, but something more disturbing going on. And that sort of led to many things that came from that. Then I guess the second big stage happened, I guess about 5 going on 6 years ago now. There was that great, just before that great American eclipse that, Randy talks about a lot. I end up getting another sort of, I go through these spikes of awareness. And at that point, I started to look at it and I was like, it's just been, at some point you look at it, you say there, every time you get a paranormal activity, you sort of throw it in the junk drawer. It's like, I don't know what that was weird. Okay, don't know where to file that. Just throw it in the junk drawer. And you throw another one in the junk drawer. And after a while, you go and try to throw a new thing in the junk drawer. And you're like, man, this is getting a little full here. I better go through it and sort through it a little bit and see what's going on. And that's when I had to really sort of take a hard look beyond some of the earlier experiences and studying and that. And I really had to say, like, what's really going on? And that's when I came across people like you and Randy and everyone else. And that really started to help me go, okay, things that I've been trying to research for years on my own to figure out that just made no mention of these types of paranormal phenomena were being
By
talked
Randy,
about.
do you mean Randy Moggins?
That's right.
Yeah, Randy's brilliant. Please continue.
So, I mean, that's sort of the gist of it. I mean, I could go through like some really long diatribes of it, but a series of types of awakenings, like I said, sometimes it's very strange. I get these experiences every few years. It'll last for about 10 to 12 days in length, but it's like suddenly all of the it's like the programming comes off and I'm able to see things and mood is elevated, sort of like psi abilities or whatever, just the will ability to sort of see the world as it is becomes very clear to me for a short period of time before I'm reset back into my more normie state of mind. So that's happened several times over the years, and each time I get a little bit closer, but they usually come at a pretty high cost as well. So from there, I mean, I'll just let you ask the questions
When
to
did you
go
re
into it. I mean, I could go back to any point you want or anything else that you
just
want.
you know, when did the realization hit you that there was this lack of a better term, non-human involvement in your life, that there was something beyond the visual spectrum, if you will, that had, for whatever reason, an interest in you and seemed to be popping up at key junctures of your life?
I guess a big one too was and what I guess I'm happy that I tried to document some of these things as they occurred. And a lot of my experiences started to come out when I lived in Korea in the early 2000s. That's when my first sort of what might be called alternate reality experience sort of came to me quite clearly. When I was living next to the US Army base that I mentioned there, Yongsan, Central Seoul. Another experience, though, directly with an entity revealed itself to me and talked in a state one time. I didn't mention this with you. It was a reptilian, huge. The air that's around them is very interesting when I've had. It's usually like pinkish purplish light at the same time. Extremely powerful being. It didn't have to posture or anything. It was just there. And I think some of my experiences have been neutral with them. I think there are definitely the ones that are neutral that perhaps they're actually trying to convey information that they think is useful to me. So there's obviously different levels of working with them. And that's very strange because I thought at the time, you know, it's really weird. I'm not scared by these beings, but I really probably should be. I mean, it was pretty terrifying. You know, a familiarity with the beings. And I've noticed that even through having a past life regression, I even had encounters with them as well, which is interesting in itself. So that's a big one. I guess a big one that I use to try to talk that was probably my most, one of the most unsettling experiences in it was an event that sort of pivoted my life. It's when I was still a university student back in my small uni town. It was, it's about 2 hours outside of, it was outside of Toronto. And it's actually where Manly P. Hall grew up. it's a place that I had more paranormal activity than anywhere else. And, it's a very creepy place, sort of like living in the Twilight Zone or the Outer Limits kind of place. And actually had an encounter in the 3D with two other friends of mine right off the street with someone who was a hybrid or hosting reptilian and did a loosh attack on us at that time. Which was pretty insane when you think about it.
What were the
But
circumstances? This was like at twilight, towards dusk, or.
this was around midnight.
Oh, okay.
It was a summer evening. It was actually a really chaotic, like this town, it's like it would go through collective psychoses, I noticed at times, where everybody acted the same way. It's like they would just, everybody was suddenly acting or thinking the same way. You could actually cut the air. There was so much electrostatic charge at times. The First Nations people didn't believe in actually living in that area because they said it was too spiritually powerful. So I was there with friend of mine who's about 10 years my senior and her partner. And it was like a college night. It was like the one college had had its graduation. All the students were out on the street, and it was sort of similar from the university. There was a lot of there. So it was a big, crazy night. And all these people come in from like neighboring towns and that as well. We're walking up the main drag. It's like one of these older main drags where, you know, where the cars could pull off on the street. There's a little parking and that. Sense this truck coming down the street. I was like, don't like that truck for whatever reason. I just had a really bad feeling about it. It sort of got stopped by the red light. And as soon as it turned green, it peeled like it was just going to blast down the road, which happened a lot. Instead, it veers off and pulls up right next to us. And as it does, sort of turn to like look at who are these crazy people driving this truck. So we go to turn our head, and my friends too did the same thing at the same time, and we were sort of walking abreast to each other. And as we did, we became paralyzed. And I've actually worked on the phenomenology of this quite specifically. I'm trying to get even the most minute details down right. But so our heads were paralyzed. We couldn't move it. And I noticed before it started to do its thing, it's like it almost sent out this dart, this psychic dart that was like tethered. And it went straight to our pineal gland. And then it started to smile and shape shift as it was smiling, and then it was making this sound at the same time. It's almost fish style sound. It's like very, I don't want to make it too funny, but as the sound came out, the shape kept changing to like a more and more like toothy and evil grin. And it was like really getting off because it wanted to scare us. And I wasn't scared, strangely enough. I wasn't scared, but I felt like the fear dart was like catalyzing some kind of fear response. And then it would just shoot back and forth between us like, over and over as it was sort of shifting and moving and making the sound. And it did it for about 10 seconds. We were completely paralyzed, couldn't move, couldn't do anything. And then afterwards, it sort of had its little bit of fun. We sort of, with all our effort, turned our heads, broke the gaze, and then just started walking away. And I was just like, oh, walk away. I sort of said out the side of my mouth, I'm like, oh, did that just happen to you guys? And they're like, shut up, keep walking. I looked behind me, and it was right there, and it went to go into the bank to use the cash machine. I went straight to the car, locked the doors, and stayed there until dawn. It was terrifying. Strangely enough, that event, not just at that moment, but it would precipitate to have huge effects in my life. My relationship with that person, who I ended up doing business with, and everything else, ended up with a lot of legal issues that came afterwards. I mean, she thought I was into some kind of dark arts and all of this, and all of these completely changed the direction of my life just to, without going into excess
Yeah,
detail.
just to interject for a moment, what happens sometimes when you have a shared experience with someone, or you're in comms with someone, and say they reach out to you because you're a researcher or whatever, and then they start having negative experiences, sometimes they project out and see you as a focal point for the source of their unease.
Yeah, and that's the unfortunate part I noticed in the community, and I can relay later that even I was subjected to that. I mean, that's part of the mind control that happens, right? It's very sophisticated. We're often used as weapons against each other, which is so sad within our community too, because we really do need support. And I feel like sometimes when you get too close, when you push the wrong buttons, that's when they come in heavy against you, and they'll find a way of intervening and screwing things up. So yeah, even with my experience, I mean, I think it's been a good, 5 years since I had a very negative experience because I was being involved in, some of the SSP community stuff and that, and then I had some intervention that came in and sort of tried to get me to annihilate myself socially and existentially. So, yeah, it's true.
Spiritual warfare reprisals that E.B. Lorgan and I call them. And sometimes we've noticed that when someone is doing a lot of shadow work, when they're doing a lot of inner work, and especially if they have the innate means to enhance their own psychic abilities, once they start to get to a certain level of psychic competency, let's say, suddenly whammo, all this stuff starts happening. Helicopters are showing up, and the knee-jerk response for people who don't understand the alien non-human aspect of it, they look at it, they tend to look at it in terms of, and I don't mean this in a dismissive, a marginalizing way, but they tend to look at things in, oh, this is a targeted individual thing going on. They don't realize that some of these helicopters may not really be helicopters, that some of them
Oh,
are in
no, I
fact
know.
a cloaked alien craft that look or are simulated to sound like helicopters. So suddenly, if you're there doing some kind of inner work and you're remote viewing or something, next thing you know, helicopters are showing up and you start getting distractions, the domestic violence breaks out next door, things like that happen. Okay, that's part and parcel of the spiritual warfare to kind of reel us back in. And sometimes the interventions, as you describe them, are even more extreme, where you start getting pulled out of your body at night, you start getting overt physical abductions. But please continue.
Yeah, well, mine ended up that like later, I mean, sort of jumping around here, but I think I wrote in one email with you, I end up having actual physical abduction, that an actual military abduction, and then some things were done to me as a result of that. So yeah, it can be quite intense.
Yes, and the military aspect of it as well, which is part and parcel of this, but please continue.
Yeah, oh, it completely is. And I think just to even go back to what you were saying at the beginning, you know, I think the big problem for even a lot of the people you're talking about, the Tucker thing and the UFO stuff and that, and I think the biggest thing for most people is it's changing their worldview. I think their cosmological outlook. They're so defensive of it. They've invested so much into it that if it doesn't fit into my model, I'm going to reject it. And that's really what's going on so much with the world that we have. It's just, and I've always been one to be willing to update my model, and I don't care. It's like the quest to the truth is more important than my bad investment in the wrong model. But I think it goes back to like what you said, and I've been looking at this in relation to the Pierre Sabbat stuff, even something that you had wrote at one point and talked about the lion's roar, immobilizing its prey. I think this is what happens in that type of attack sequence. And I was looking it up in terms of the vagus nerve. I think the vagus nerve has a lot to do with it if we were to actually start to look into the physiology of.
Where is the vagus nerve and what purpose does it serve? What function does it have?
So I just have my notes here. I'm just going to read it here for a second. It carries information about pain, touch, temperature from the throat, inner and outer ear, and the meninges near the back of the head, and it goes all the way down into your stomach. So it's basically the main nerve that has control of all of your visceral systems, including pain. Receives sensory information from the internal organs in the neck, chest, and abdomen. Carries sensory information from baroreceptors and chemoreceptors. And an aorta something, oxygen levels in the blood, controls muscles in the pharynx and palate in the larynx, and they play a critical role in speaking and swallowing. It is like the primary nerve in your nervous system. And I think this is something we need to look at when we're talking about even things like leash harvesting. What is the difference? Like, what are the mechanics that we're getting into? Because, like I said, it's not just it starts to go boo and be scary or it really shape shifted. I try to keep a very objective state of mind that perhaps the shape shifting didn't happen until this type of psi dart, so to speak, was put in me. I don't know if it physically did at all. It seems that it was much more of a psychic projection than actual physical shape shifting in itself. And again, this is where people get so caught up. It has to be A or B, black or white. And this is where, like, you know, like if you control science, I mean, obviously, if science can be controlled, that you're always going to be locking humans to thinking within certain patterns. And we really have to go into the unthought, I think, if to appreciate that we're dealing with non-human intelligence. So I found that interesting. And interestingly enough, too, it sort of goes into, I don't know if you want more along with this, but I did notice that I also got the Murder of Reality by Pierre Sabbat. And there was a really interesting one where he talks about smiling angels. And anyway, he talks about how in the ancient Babylonian traditions, angels specifically killed children through smiling and the smile in this context refers to a grimace. He shows how it's related into Hebrew and then Arabic, looking at the viper and the circle and this kind of thing. And a smirk, a smack, snake, and snicker. It's all related to this avaya word. And then he gets into, it's quite interesting where he talks about the veil The Rika, the veil from Sanskrit, the root of worship, informs the Germanic word Wicca, which is contrasted in English with vicar. And the veiled Rika, the ceremony of the ritus celebrated in Rome, is analogous to the ritus, which is a wide open mouth or grin, nominal of a smiling angel. So I think there's this thing, because you're talking about the clowns. I know you talk a lot about the clowns and the alien clowns and this type of thing. I think there's a very strong correlation between these clowns, this grimace, and Sadok talks too that the red nose is actually them smelling the sacrificial offering, right? The blood of the child. And so you look at Stephen King, you got the Pennywise figure in that as well, right? The smile. And I was looking at it in terms of my relationship with this entity. I was dealing with this person who's hosting an entity, whatever it is, and that it was related to the smile that it was doing as well. And I think that's a really critical part of the body of knowledge that has to be worked on for us to really get beyond some of the loops of the regular narrative that we seem to be in.
Key points there, and also, the irony of so many of these surface level truthers who derided others for following the science the last couple of years. But what did they do with the subject of aliens, UFOs, non-terrestrial life forms here on Earth? They followed the science, because back in the seventh grade, their science teacher said, when asked by someone in class, some bright spark, "Oh, do you believe aliens are here? You see the article in the newspaper about a UFO the other night? Oh, the distances between star systems are too vast, and the types of propulsion systems, blah, 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 quack, quack, quack." So it was imprinted on them at an early age to trust the science, when the science, as you know, is bought and paid for and is really more of a religious dogma nowadays, with its own dogmas, its own taboos.
Oh, most
And
definitely.
I remember something David Adar, I think, said, who had spent time at Area 51. He said that when the deep black aerospace and military organizations that work with alien technology and advanced physics, when they recruit, and I've observed this in testimony I've heard from certain people, they don't go to the universities typically, because by that point the people, those students, are so brainwashed with basic false science that they're useless when it comes to working in these deep black special access programs, because they're just going to reject everything. The paradigm is just too
Well,
constricting
it
for them.
reminds me of the it's sort of like I don't I ashamedly admit I watched all of Game of Thrones. But one of the parts that I thought was so interesting is when they're finally getting an attack, they're at the wall, and there's these dragons coming at them and everything. And you got this guy that's just repeating, "There's no such thing as dragons. There's no such thing as dragons," as it's coming and blasting them, right? Because he can't accept it. His mind can't accept something that was such a firmly held belief before. And yeah, I think that's the entire purpose of the public indoctrination system generally. So, right, I would have gone further in my studies, but I was sort of nixed because I wanted to explore things I wasn't supposed to, even though I'd proven myself as a student. When you go into certain areas of research, even at the undergraduate level, they're like, "Yeah, you don't want to do that." Like so often you're told, if you want to go further, you better learn how to avoid certain things if you want to get a job in the future, kind it's very true.
And that's the problem that these surface level types are having, because they refuse to do the research. They look at the revelations of this guy, I can't pronounce his last name, Gorsh or Gorshuk or whatever, who's come out formally with National Reconnaissance Office, formally with National Geospatial Agency. Those are very spooky, spooky agencies that are deeply involved in satellite imagery, outer space and undersea sensors, the whole bit. So that would be the type of community in the intel community where he would likely get these, what they call, used to call in the old days, gypsy warnings and gypsy tips from people who had more access and more clearance. This is what's really going on. right? And as we talked at the outset, I mentioned that the concept of crash retrievals and recovery of alien bodies, we know this has been going on for decades. They tend to look at things in the stovepipe mentality, as far as intelligence gathering is concerned. There's no collection point at the bottom where all the various data points can be analyzed, sifted through. And they tend to have this confirmation bias where things that they don't believe in are automatically rejected, and things that reinforce the confirmation bias is cherry-picked, right? So that's where we're at now, where to me, it's like oil and water separating, and to the point where, as time goes on, and this is going to be a subject of a future commentary I'm going to be doing soon, the Twilight of the Gods, that the geoengineering, the global dimming, we are fast reaching a point when, as in the days of yore, when gods walked on Earth, there may be a point in time when these extraterrestrials slash gods will be walking on the surface again, and not just them, but cryptids, demonic entities, what have you, that are empowered by night, that are empowered by darkness. Okay, so the ones who are going to have the most difficult time dealing with this, because we've already had encounters with the supernatural and with non-human life forms, the ones that are going to have the most difficulty with this are the ones who think that everything is a holographic projection, everything is blue beam, what have you, and they're
They're
now,
actors, it's CGI, there'll
it's
be every excuse
CGI.
in the world.
And another thing also that you brought up, Pierre Sabbach, for those of you who are not familiar, you can find his interview on my Cosmic Switchboard show. That guy is absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And
I
the
think
two
he's probably one of the smartest human beings to ever live, to be honest.
and what he's done, the study of the etymological roots of all this, going to the Aramaic, the Hebrew, the Arabic,
Akkadian,
the
everything.
Akkadian, he just goes on and he's the
Sanskrit,
Sanskrit,
whatever.
and then he proves over and over and over again, they're not just talking about Elohim, they're not just talking about watchers, they're not just talking about angels. When you break it down and bring it to its etymological roots, they're talking about reptilians, they're talking about
Yes.
serpent lizard people over and over again. And then when you also, as a companion source of research, I don't know if you're familiar with Mauro Baglino, the
No.
Italian. Well, I'll send you a PDF
Great.
of one of his books that's been translated in English.
Yeah.
He's taken the Hebrew and he's pointed out, right? And this is what a lot of these fundies, a lot of these religious fundamentalists, right? And I'm a believer in Jesus Christ. I am, but I
Sure.
have my
Yeah.
own way of believing, right? So I don't throw Jesus out with the bathwater.
No.
Point being is that Mauro Baglino and Pierre Sabbach do what these fundies don't do, where they just say everything is demonic, there are no aliens, yada yada yada, right? Mauro Baglino, in his translations of the original Hebrew in the Old Testament, he points out again and again, they're not referring to spiritual beings in this passage. They're talking about flesh and blood entities that are flying around in craft, that are intervening, that are reproducing and hybridizing with humans. See, and that's going to be very threatening to people with this paradigmatic tunnel vision, right? When the
And that's
experts,
the
please.
part, yeah, well, that's the part too where they don't get it. They try to say, well, the reason they have to cover up the UFO thing is because it would be disruptive to people's religion and belief systems. And it's so funny how they're always telling the truth while they're lying through their teeth at the same time. Because when you put it in your context that you just said there, which is right, they realize that the reptilians, their Yahweh, is not what they thought.
Yahweh, the
That's a little bit
that's
difficult
right.
when that's going to involve like 3 billion people on the planet
That
and
is
heavily invested in those
Yahweh,
systems.
the reptilian blood god. And also the fact that if one wants to derive, this is just me here talking, any kind of spiritual benefit from the Bible, to me, it would come from the New Testament, right? It wouldn't be from the Old Testament, which is all about ritual sacrifice. It's all about reptilian demonic blood gods, right? And then when you study the works of and it's very dense. It's dense from a positive standpoint, because So Sabacc just gives you, hammers you with data points and factoids over from all these different languages and all the correlations. I mean, I like to read, but I can only read Pierre's work like a chapter at a time, to be honest. And then
Oh, I've been.
similar.
I you you could you should look how ripped up mine is. You can tell I've been using it a lot.
Yeah,
Yeah, it's.
I
I'm
use
actually.
highlighters.
I've likened it to his work is sort of like we were talking about a cosmological system, and that's what I like about it because people are like, well, what's the nuts and bolts? They get so caught into the physical proof and evidence. This is physical proof and evidence. This is linguistic analysis that is so deep. This isn't just some casual associations that he sort of went a little bit too crazy with or anything. It's proven emphatically. I look at it more like it's like a fractal system, Pierre's work, because you go in, and as you go in and understand something in depth, it's like it starts to create a whole new picture, and then you got the whole new picture. And as you understand that, you start to go into the depth, and it's just constantly playing between the two. It is so supple. It is so critical for us to actually rework things based on the truths in it. To me, it's my Bible at this point.
Yes, and the key takeaway that I had from that, and you just mentioned this, the absolutely key component is the cosmological, Weltschau, worldview perspective, because the reductionist, materialistic bent of the dogma of science, right, where everything has to be broken down to a particle, a subparticle, and it has to be tangible. You have to hold it in order for it to be real. And then here are texts provided by Sabacc and Mauro Baglino that are saying, wait a minute, the ancients from all over the world have been describing this cosmology, which a critical component of which is these non-human extraterrestrial beings largely, but many also from subterranean cavern systems, what have you, that have been malignly influencing the human race from the get-go. And it's universal. It doesn't matter what part of the world you're talking about, the ancient Vedic script, the Sumerian, the Akkadian, and what they do. Again, the stovepiping and the cherry picking, where the Sumerologists will bore you to tears with, oh, look at all these cuneiforms and all this data about their jurisprudence and their court proceedings, and look at all these cuneiforms about the agricultural crop year yields, right? That they were so into. Oh yeah, but wait a minute, what about these cuneiforms that are talking about the Anunnaki? And then Mauro Baglino has this word out of Hebrew, which phonetically and sounds very much like Anunnaki, Anakim, or something. I forget what he calls it, but it's the same thing essentially. And so when you point out to the Sumerologists in our example, well, what about these cuneiforms that talk about these beings that hybridize the human race that came here in spaceships? Oh, that's just mystical, superstitious mumbo jumbo. It's not meant to be taken literally, like the crop yields and the jurisprudence and the boring as tears court cases that we emphasize. No, that's mystical mumbo jumbo. See, that's the mindset, right? And
Well,
a
yeah, I mean,
lot.
they've been controlling academia through the whole thing. I mean, especially, I mean, you look at the Royal Society. The Royal Society is clearly a politically controlled intellectual group, right? And it's not just controlled, it's controlled by the people with the occult knowledge. Your Rosicrucians.
That's the funny thing, because you look at the Golden Dawn, you look at the Ordo Templi Orientis, so many of them, the Rosicrucians, are sprinkled throughout academy academia, and they know through their own inner workings and what have you, and the ceremonies they take part in, that their body of knowledge, some of these guys are adepts, their body of knowledge is vastly different than what they're teaching to the unwashed masses. And the unwashed masses, in our example, are these surface level types now, who are starting to get on my nerves, quite frankly. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, and it's important that we go back and we understand it, and we also challenge these narratives that they're so good at pumping out now. This is the big thing that I'm noticing. I mean, like this Gaia TV stuff, they're so strict on like This is the sequence of events. This is the way the narrative gets built. We're going to totally bypass it. We're going to start at 1945 or whatever. What the hell? Saying it started in 1945 and then just jumping back to ancient Egypt is not doing us a service. We actually need to go back and understand the last 500 years and go way back at the same time. We need a more complete picture about what's going on. And that's what really irritates me as well, is how they are they're atomizing ufology into all these different groups, as many groups as you can create. And hopefully you can get as many of them fighting each other as possible. And then the ones who play their cards right will get lots of funding. We get lots of press time, and then maybe they get a show.
Get on TV a lot. Hello, Nick Pope, right? And, just quick thought, and then I'd like your thoughts on this before we round out this first segment. What we see nowadays with the mudslinging, with the acrimony, with the endless accusations, this guy is controlled opposition, that's a psyop. These are people, for the most part, who've never studied the Cold War in before spy counter spy game. They behave actually more like junior James Angletons, the CIA counterintelligence chief that just wrecked the CIA from his incessant mole hunts. Every time a real Soviet defector wanted to spy for the West, oh, no. He's a plant, he's a provocateur. And he had this coterie of these acolytes of his who believed in this monster plot. James Angleton couldn't have destroyed the CIA's espionage, counter-espionage capability any better if he'd been a Soviet agent himself, right? And also, you look at the American turncoats, the Aldrich Ames and the Robert Hansons and others like them. A lot of these surface-level truthers, they don't behave like these what I consider to be these noble Soviet defector spies, right? These guys that knew that they were part of this wretched, oppressive system, and for ideological reasons, for matters of integrity, they began spying for the West, and a lot of them were kicked to the curb. And because of Ames and Angleton, they were left, hung out to dry. So rather than behaving like these real, and full of integrity type Soviet spies working for the West, they behave more like Aldrich Ames. They believe more like Robert Hansen. They behave more like James Angleton. That's what I'm seeing. That's how my mind draws this parallel with what I'm observing. And the fact that so many people in mass have risen up against Tucker. Oh, Tucker, this is proof he's controlled out, but he's talking about Jeffrey Epstein. He's talking about mass immigration. He's talking about black and white violence. It's like, well, if that's controlled opposition, now he's talking about aliens. If that's controlled opposition, we need more of that, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And so what, because they're ignorant about Roswell and they're ignorant about Bent Waters and Reynolds and Forrest, they just say, oh, this thing that Tucker Carlson's saying about aliens, he's gone off the rails now. The emotional reaction it's engendering with all these surface level types is a marvel to behold. All their programming, all their just basic ignorance is just all just gushing forward now. Anyway, your thoughts on that before we end this first segment.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. They it's very well, that's the whole problem with psychological operations, right? It's hard to know what to trust and believe in after a while, when you can have double, triple agents and so on and so forth. All I have to say is, I think we really need to go back and study East Germany more, because I think that's where they worked out a lot of these problems before they made it global. In fact, I talked to the director of the memorial there at Checkpoint Alpha, and he's like, "Well, how do you think we could make this a better experience for the visitors?" And I'm like, "Well, I was watching about all these things where they were showing like the procedures of what it took to go over the checkpoint in the past. They have the fake border, they got these ramming logs that come down off the hills to destroy your vehicle and everything." And I said, "Maybe you could." Maybe you could recreate the experience for the modern world, because maybe people just don't understand it because we live in this psyop today. Like, this was the time of Snowden and everything. Now everybody knows their phone is spying on them and they don't care. this cognitive level of dissonance. Like, I know I'm being spied on, and I don't care about that. Whereas, you know, what East Germany symbolized in terms of this horrible intrusion in your privacy and whatever is so much of a thing. It also makes me think of like these prisoner exchanges that used to occur with East Germany. You'd have these political prisoners and that. And even after they released them to go to the West, it was like the East Germans were using this as a source of money. Like revenue generation was selling prisoners to the West. But those prisoners knew when they went into the West, they couldn't really be themselves, even in the West. They were still a prisoner in West Germany because they were being followed around by East German agents within West Germany the whole time. So that there was this cooperation between both sides throughout the entire operation. And I think that's maybe an abstract way of getting to your point, but I feel like that's so much of what we're working with is like this type of exchange. This on one level there's this antagonism, and on a higher level there's this agreement network. And at this point, people like they hate the these Tuckers. They don't want people who have the influence, who can change, get people to change their minds. They want to discredit that because they want to keep people within those carefully controlled cosmologies is the main thing. If they can control the cosmology, they can control the people. And that's the whole point about us being ignorant of our history is about, because we're easy to control as long as we don't understand our history. We can keep reinvesting back into these bad ideas. So I'm sorry if it doesn't answer your question
No,
quite, but
that's
sort of
absolutely
an
what I
abstract
was
way of
thinking,
thinking
because
about
I think in Cold War, spy, counter spy, checkpoint Charlie terms.
it.
And one quick point I'll make, you have so many accusations of controlled opposition in the service level community. Those of us, especially old timers in the UFO field, we've been around real government agents. We've been around real controlled opposition, real disinformers. I'm talking about people who will stab you in the back and just ruin your life and have the whole system come down on you like a ton of bricks, right? And like we were
Oh, it
talking,
happens.
it happens. And like,
Well, I know, I've experienced it,
we
yeah.
recognize them for what they are. There's another one. We don't get emotionally overwrought about it, although at times it seems like I can get emotionally overwrought, mostly just because I'm just irritated at times by the whole thing. Point being is that whereas the surface level types talk about controlled opposition, we live through it. We've seen how real government agents posing as UFO researchers were real gatekeepers. And because I tend to look at things from this spy counter spy and then expanded it out to this cosmic spy game kind of mentality, because it's not just that you're dealing with a person who's a government agent, that person could be a host for a reptilian entity on top of that. So you're not only just dealing with a human conscious who's trying to betray
No.
you and stab you in the back and lead you astray. You're dealing with like a consciousness that literally comes from some nether dimension somewhere, right? That's the level that we're operating at. So anyhow, had a fascinating first segment with my friend D here. And for our dear listeners out there, thank you for tuning in. If you like what we do, if you believe what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.